what's a way that you can speak to all those different people all at once and kind of, you know, represent their stories and tell their stories to the world? So I guess, you know, I've just explained the reason why we do podcasting.
Welcome to the Earfluence Podcast, where businesses and personal brands can amplify their expertise. I'm Jason Gilligan, CEO of Earfluence, and with me today is Kim Wong from Red Hat. She leads the podcast division. I think I'll let her tell her title here in a second. But Kim, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What's your official title?
My official title, well, I do a lot of things. My official title is a senior writer and producer for Red Hat branded podcasts. So Red Hat has three branded podcasts at this time. We have our flagship show, which we sunsetted in, I think, 2021 or 2022, Command Line Heroes, which is kind of our more famous show. It's a tech history podcast. We have Compiler, which we launched in 2021. So we just celebrated 2 years, August 2021. So that's more of a show for, we call it tech newbies or people who are starting their career or their journey in tech, whether you are coming off of like a computer science program or coming out of high school or off an internship or even transitioning from another discipline or another like type of industry. That's the show for them. And then we have our newest show, Code Comments, which we launched last year in October, and we're about to relaunch again actually in a few weeks from now. And Code Comments is more for our kind of senior level technologists. It's for people who, I like to think of it as a show for people who've gone through it, meaning that they've deployed and released, you know, different, you know, applications, different platforms, and they've gone through these mass like projects and migrations, and they understand kind of like the finer points of communicating with people who maybe not be tech savvy or tech adjacent people who are outside of their area of responsibility, how to get, you know, different operations teams and different development teams kind of on the same page, and dealing with all the different, you know, interpersonal communication conflicts. You know, it's very story driven, and how to address that. So a listener can kind of gain some insight from those stories and, like, you know, implement those kinds of learnings in their own career path. That's so awesome. That's what we have as far as our slate.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got so much going on. And sure. For our listeners or viewers that don't know much about Red Hat, because in the Raleigh area, people know Red Hat. They see the big sign in the tech market. People know who Red Hat or what Red Hat is. But, you know, it was formed in, I want to say, in the mid-90s,
yep.
And then went public in 1999.
Yep.
It was one of the first stocks that I played around with.
Oh, wow.
Just in time for the tech bubble in like 2000, 2001.
I take it back.
Right. It was fun, though. And then it's got about $3 billion in revenue and was bought by IBM three years ago, something like that,
yes,
for
finalized.
$34 billion.
Yep. That's right.
Anyway, so it is an enterprise-level company. Mm. And that's what I want to get into today is why podcasting for an enterprise-level type of company? Mm. And then more importantly, how does that even work? Because, you know, you think about podcasts in general, most podcasts are going to be one, two people operations. But there are so many stakeholders here with Red Hat and so much to gain from that. But then, like, so much to lose from it too.
Mm.
So anyway, let's start from the beginning. You gave us a synopsis of your podcast. What's the why for podcasts for Red Hat as a whole?
Well, I'll back up and say this the way that I know that my stakeholders back at my job want me to say it. Red Hat is the largest enterprise open source tech company of its type in the world. And, you know, we've been doing what we do for obviously many years. People know us mostly for Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which is one of like our flagship products, also for Red Hat OpenShift. So, you know, that we've been in the market for, you know, many, many years. But surprisingly, a lot of people, you know, the average person on the street who's not in Raleigh, right, doesn't really know who we are, what we do. A lot of people even in Raleigh, because of the name of the certain amphitheater that's downtown in Raleigh that they may have gone to see a show at or two, they think that we are a music company, that we own, you know, the Red Hat Amphitheater, and we are, you know, we run concerts. You know, like, I've had people try to hand me mixtapes on the street.
No, we haven't.
Yes,
really?
Yes, I did actually have somebody, like, can you like, take this to somebody upstairs? They saw me, like, coming out, and they saw my ID and my T-shirt, and they said, oh, can you take this upstairs and, like, maybe play it for a producer? And I'm like, we are a tech company.
Well, you should just have been like, yes, I will.
Absolutely, yes. I'll take this upstairs. I'll play this for my boss, and he'll look at me and be like, what are you doing? Go back to work. So with that, obviously, there's a wider, you know, for people who may not be familiar with open source technology, open source software, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different communities or a lot of different projects. So you have open source projects that are, you know, they're not proprietary, right? The opposite of open source is proprietary. They're not proprietary. They're not owned by a company. They're usually managed by a foundation, but they're not owned by anyone, right? So like the Linux kernel, like it's not owned by anyone. The Linux, you know, foundation, they, you know, kind of manage it. They maintain it. It's a project. And we as a company take those open source projects and turn them into enterprise, you know, enterprise grade, mostly solutions, but, you know, enterprise grade offerings for companies who want to use enterprise source software open source software. And you're probably asking, like, why would anybody want to use open source software? So actually, you know, one really good reason is because there's no lock-in, right? So if you think about buying a solution or an offering from a company that is a proprietary company, so you're buying a contract, essentially. You're signing on with them for like years and years. What does that mean? That means that if there's a support issue, you have to go to them. If there's, you know, something that you want to implement, another platform you want to use, you have to make sure it complies with whatever, you know, whatever technology that they've deployed, whatever that they've, you know, that you're using right now, whatever you've adopted from them. And surprisingly, a lot of companies want to be agile and they don't want to be locked in. And so open source has kind of become the way to go because you don't have to worry about, you know, oh, is this something where I have to like go to X, Y, and Z company and get their approval on? Or like, you know, if it's something that I'm trying to implement and procure for my company for them to be agile, I want to automate things, I want to use AI. You know, if they're going to tell me no, are they going to tell me it's not going to work? I don't have to worry about that with open source software. So that's really like the power that open source has. And when you're talking about that, you're obviously bringing in the open source community and people that many of them volunteer their time. They do not get paid to do what they do. Open source, you know, contributors, you know, what we call upstream and downstream. So upstream is like up to the project, right? And downstream is like kind of like where, you know, kind of where Red Hat, you know, goes towards like the downstream where it's like different forks and there's all kinds of tech that's going into that. But what you really need to know is these open source projects kind of like by a byproduct of that, by their, you know, very nature, they spawn these huge communities and these people are all over the world. They are in different countries. They're working in, like, you know, there's people working in Spain. There's people working in the Czech Republic. There's people working in Japan and China, Antarctica. They're all over the place. And they're doing all kinds of things. They're, you know, maybe they're not pushing things, you know, like they're not, you know, putting in merge requests. They're not like doing development. Maybe they're doing documentation. Or maybe they're, you know, working in developer advocacy to like build kind of like educational materials so that people can, you know, use the technology the way that they want to or the way that they, you know, need to for their business. So it's a big community. And how, you know, what's a way that you can speak to all those different people all at once and kind of, you know, represent their stories and tell their stories to the world? So I guess, you know, I've just explained the reason why we do podcasting. So, you know, that was the initial kind of, I guess the initial birth of Command Line Heroes was to kind of tell those stories, like with that open source kind of like point of view in the tech space, which before that point, I mean, 2018 was when we launched Command Line Heroes. So, you know, the landscape of podcasting was very different. And a lot of the tech podcasts you had out there was basically what I call TDT, two dudes talking. yes. So two dudes talking, you know, no offense to two dudes in the basement talking, but you know, we wanted to do something a little bit different where we would talk to people from all over the world about open source, what they love about open source, and what really makes them passionate about what they do. And that was kind of the basis of the kind of the birth of podcasting at Red Hat.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And so Command Line Heroes, I listened to Command Line Heroes. It was a next level podcast for sure. It was not two dudes talking. There was a lot, there were a lot of interviews there, all compiled together, narration, music beds, like all those different things, right? Were you involved from the beginning in...
I was brought on at season, I think, six. So okay. I worked on four seasons of Command Line Heroes before we ended the show. My, you know, my compatriots on my team, Brent Semino, who is kind of the showrunner for a lot of our podcasts. You may know him from Compiler. You've heard his voice. He was kind of there since the inception of Command Line Heroes. And then also Johan Philippine, who is my co-producer on Compiler. You've heard his voice if you've heard the show. He was there, I think season two was when he was bought in. So they're both kind of like, they're kind of like more senior than I am. But, you know, I'm not gonna sell myself short. I feel like I've done a lot for, you know, Command Line Heroes. I've learned a lot, you know, and it's been an amazing journey to like have been on that show and then like jump off from there into what we're doing now. Like yeah. It's kind of amazing.
So Two Dudes Talking is super easy. You turn on the mics and you record and there may not be any sort of agenda, doing a Red Hat podcast, doing an enterprise podcast is a lot different.
Yeah.
How does one podcast episode get started? Like walk us through that process.
I will gladly walk you through that process. I'll start by saying that one episode of Compiler, and this is pretty much universal across all of our shows, Command Line Heroes and Code Comments. One episode of the podcast takes about 2 months to produce.
Wow.
From scratch to final product.
Yeah.
2 months. And we're doing these episodes, you know, if you're listening to Command Line Heroes, those seasons are usually about 8 episodes, and they're coming out every other week, which means that we're doing a lot of them concurrently.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a mad dash for, you know, once we decide on kind of like, you know, what we want to do, editorial theme for the season. It is a mad dash to get all of the research, all of the chase production, which is basically finding guests to be on the show and speak to the finer points of whatever we're talking about, to get narration down. We had the amazing Saranya Barak, doing the voice of Command Line Heroes, doing mm-hmm. the narration. She's a very busy woman. If you don't know who she is, go look her up. She's a very busy woman. So getting on her schedule was no small feat. And then just kind of going back and forth in the review processes, approval processes, everything we do has to go through legal. Everything we do has to go through PR. There are multiple.
Let's start from the beginning.
All right.
What's how do you start with the podcast concept? Ooh. Like, how do you even think like, okay, here's an idea. This needs to be an episode.
Mm.
Like, is there a bunch of like whiteboard? Is there like, okay, I've got these 10 ideas for this season. Let's tackle this one first. Like, how does that all work to even start?
There's about 2 to 3 week period of audience development. Well, not audience development, but theme development. There's about 2 to 3 weeks we spend working on what we're going to do, throwing out ideas, looking at what's worked in the past, looking at our performance and our metrics from the last season when applicable.
And are you thinking this is like topical or more evergreen content?
Yeah, that's a good question. We always want to approach things with an evergreen kind of like mentality. Obviously, that's easier said than done.
Sure.
thinking of very specific examples in my head. We do want to make things, especially for something for like a wider audience, we want to make it as evergreen as possible. We want it to be like relevant, mm-hmm. you know, to people who maybe they didn't find the episode when it came out. And a lot of people don't, and we can talk about that, you know, discovery aspect of it, but a lot of people don't find Command Line Heroes until much, much, much later after we're done with the season.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
Yeah. All right. So you've got a list of potential topics and mm-hmm. you're brainstorming all this. You come up with a theme for the season. How many people are involved in that initial process?
Whew. a lot. So we, you know, first off, for Command Line Heroes, we approached a company named Pacific Content. They are based in Canada. They are our dear friends. We have been collaborating with them for a long time. They work specifically with a lot of the podcast production, a lot of the audio engineering that goes into the final version of the episode that you hear. That's done with them. They compose our themes, so our music, the music that we have, I think, for Command Line Heroes and certainly for a compiler. Those themes that you hear when you hear the opening, you know, episode, the opening of the episodes, those were composed specifically for those shows. Those were not, songs that you can find on like a Epidemic Sound or wherever you go to get your music for your videos and things. No, those songs are made specifically for these projects. So, we have a team over at Pacific that does that. We have a lot of people on the back end when it comes to, you know, paid media, paid media placements, when it comes to audience development, when it comes to, you know, research and fact checking. There's a lot of people involved, especially when making a show like Command Line Heroes. I probably can't even think about all the different things that goes into like just one episode of that show.
Mm. And so are you leading all of this?
From the editorial side, yes.
Gotcha.
I joined the team in 2020 in the midst of a certain global health crisis that we will not name. And I was invited on by, at the time, the lead editorial director for the show, Casey Stegman, who has since left the company. And he and myself and Johan, we were kind of the team that was responsible for, deciding on the editorial theme for the season, and then, B, doing all the research and putting all the kind of, like, different bits and bops of the story or the stories together. So after that, it would go to more like kind of like a more formal kind of scripting for Saran to kind of read off of. And that's, you know, that's kind of getting in the weeds. But yeah, we were basically leading the editorial approach. And from the Red Hat side, especially representing the show internally, which was really important. So
yeah. So how many interviews are you doing for like each episode? Because from my recollection of Command Line Heroes, and I'll be honest, I haven't listened to a compiler, but from my recollection of Command Line Heroes, it was a lot of interviews in one episode, and then the narrator would wrap it all around with the voiceover.
Yeah.
So like, how many interviews are you doing for each episode, and how are you finding these people?
For Command Line Heroes, we had a dedicated chase producer who at Pacific Content, who we worked with specifically at our direction to find guests that we would want to speak to for the episode. So we had, you know, a really great partner in that. But every episode I would say that I've worked on has had about 3 to 4 guests on average. If you look at, and you can find all these episodes still wherever you find your podcast, and also on redhat.com. I have to say that. My boss told me I had to say that. So about 3 to 4 on average. Now for compiler, we've kind of narrowed it down to 2 to 3, and there's reasons for that, and I will get to those.
Okay.
I'll get to those later if you don't mind, but there's a specific reason for that. So, and if you're thinking about us doing one episode and then kind of in a waterfall, staggering them out, and we're doing maybe like 5 or 6 at a time, it adds up very quickly. You know, in each one of those interviews is probably about an hour. Sometimes it's more.
Yeah.
So if you think about it that way, it takes up a lot of time. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, of which they might be on for like 8 minutes and ultimately in the episode, right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so now, are you the one that's the chaser? Like, or do you have a specific chaser? Or like, how does it all work?
For Compiler, we decided as a team that we were going to bring more of our production in-house.
Uh-huh.
So for Compiler, we have bought our amazing production manager, Caroline Craighead. We bought her into our team. So she is in Red Hat. She works in Red Hat. And she is kind of like the person who like is our audio editor kind of on site. And then myself and Johan, your Pokemon has evolved. We graduated into full-blown producers and started doing our own Chase and our own interviews without any Chase production assistance. It has been an interesting experience, to say the least.
Why?
It's a lot. It's a lot. Chasing down, you know, guests. You know, it's a lot of skill involved. That's a science in and of itself.
Yes.
It's an art form in and of itself. You have to find out how to pitch, who to pitch to. You have to find them at the right time. You have to be cognizant or aware of events that are happening in the tech industry. If there's something going on, like a big, you know, Adobe Max or Dreamforce or AWS event, people are not going to be available to talk to you because they're too busy trying to put together their own keynote and their own session. They don't want to do a podcast. So you have to be cognizant of so many different things when you're doing Chase. And everybody kind of has their own style. I've developed my own style. Johan has his own style. You know, but a lot of it has been trial by fire.
And, oh, yeah.
And it's been fun, but it's also been a lot of work.
Yeah. Oh, I totally get it. And you've got to figure out where those people are. Are they on Instagram? Are they on LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Are they going to actually respond to a cold outreach email?
Yeah.
And it's very, very difficult. Like, how do you know when the right time is to follow up?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you haven't heard back from them. So there's this tool for Gmail now.
Yeah.
Called AutoPest. That was
okay.
Developed by a Duke professor named Aaron Dinan. Just had a conversation with him. I haven't checked this out yet, but apparently what it'll do is it'll formulate follow-up emails for you through AI.
Ooh.
And we'll do it on whatever schedule that you set it out to.
I need this in my life.
So yeah, autopest.com, I think.
Ooh, I definitely need this in my life, in my personal life, much less my working life. I need to be pestering people on the personal side as well. Wow, that is amazing.
So because it's now all in-house and—
Not all in-house.
Okay.
I will add an asterisk to that. Our composer is still external, and then a lot of our kind of like the finer things like paid media and like, you know, handling all of like the finer operational aspects of the feed and everything like that. All of that is still with Pacific Content and also our sound design. So special effects and like the sound design sounds very polished. You can thank them. You know, they're, you know, really consummate professionals, great at what they do. We've had a really great working relationship with them, obviously, for a very, you know, very long time, 5 years. Other than that, and I can get to that now or later, but other than that, all of the things that you see and hear, and I put that emphasis there on purpose, everything that you see and hear from Compiler and Code Comments is made at Red Hat.
Nice. So you mentioned that you're just doing 2 or 3 interviews per episode now. Mm-hmm. Is that because it's all in-house, the chasing is all in-house?
Yes.
Or is there something more to it?
Yes and no. So we found through our own research that it was a little bit easier for listeners to only hear a certain amount of voices in the show.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Remember, with Command Line Heroes, only one person doing narrating, like kind of script and clip, as they say in the business. So narration, there's a clip, and then there's a script. So you hear Saran kind of contextualizing what's being said. For Compiler, it's different because you have Brent Simoneau, again, our showrunner. You have Angela Andrews, the amazing Angela Andrews, Scooter Phoenix, on social media, who has, you know, is a solutions architect. She has years of experience in the tech industry. She's a co-host. She's a voice on our show. You also have me, and you have Johan. That's a lot of people that are talking at you. So it's really hard for listeners to kind of keep track of who's who and what's going on. So, you know, when you're making a show that doesn't have any real visual component, you have to also understand that, like, adding too many cooks to the kitchen can be confusing and can undermine what you're trying to do.
That's really smart. Yeah.
So that's why, from a production standpoint, we move towards having, like, maybe 2 or 3, no more than, you know, that many voices per episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So as you're putting all these episodes together,
you
mentioned it has to go through legal process.
Mm-hmm.
How long does that take? Like, what is, you know, are the lawyers looking through this and looking at the transcript and be like, no, you can't say that? Or like, are there debates about what you can and can't say? Like, how does that all work?
I would like to extend my gratitude to one Amanda Newby, who is our head honcho of law at Red Hat. She is a wonderful partner for our show, and she's a fan of our show, which you always want.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, you know, there was a lot of, you know, kind of back and forth, a lot of process refinement that had to take place with reviewing of episodes. And it really, I think that it kind of, like, as my boss likes to say, broke their brains a little bit internally, because we were doing something that we had never done before as a company. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, from a marketing perspective, they were looking at it in a very different way. But I can't stress enough the importance of building allies and building relationships, especially in the podcasting space. Overall, marketing, we know it's important, but especially in podcasting. Because there's a lot of podcasting that looks from the outside like a black box. And what you want is to, you know, obviously produce things as quickly and as you know, effortlessly as possible. But in order to do that, you really have to get people on your side and mm-hmm. get allies. And some of those really important allies are in the legal department. Yeah. Make friends with them. Be transparent with them. Bring them in early in the experience, early in like the development, and you can't go wrong. I can think of maybe one or two instances where we've run afoul of our internal PR and marketing and our corporate communications teams and our legal teams. And that's because we've done the work in building those relationships. And I'm happy to say that. I'm really, you know, they make my life easier and I might make their lives easier. And that's kind of how that goes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Does IBM, your parent company, do they have an opinion? Like, how does that?
No.
Okay. Okay.
We love our friends over at IBM. Hello. You know, red and blue. So basically, you know, in the beginning, and I think Jenny Rometty spoke to this during the acquisition period when she was still at IBM, she you said, you know, we're not coming in to try to change what Red Hat is doing well. And, you know, so far, it's been true. She's been true to her word. They've all been true to their word, right? It's, at least in my side of the house, we don't have any interference from IBM. We don't have anyone whispering in our ear. I'm actually working on an episode right now with IBMers as guests. But other than, you know, helping us out, helping us facilitate, you know, getting guests on the show at certain times when we request it, there's really been no interference. We don't really have to worry about them. They're trusting in us to do what we do best. And, you know, we've proven success. You know, 5 million downloads isn't a lie.
Wow.
So,
you congratulations.
Know, thank you.
So you mentioned a great vendor in Pacific Content,
yeah.
You know, that you've been working with for 5 years. Now, I imagine there are some vendors that you've worked with from a marketing standpoint,
yes,
that mm-hmm. that haven't been great for you and didn't quite know what it was like to work with an enterprise level client. Maybe they just didn't have the experience.
You can get me in trouble.
No, I don't want you. I don't want you to name anybody in particular, right? But I'm just saying, like, what are some things that marketing agencies need to know or vendors need to know about working with an enterprise level client with all the different layers in there? Maybe it moves slower, maybe whatever else. Mm. Like, what can you tell them about working with an enterprise level client?
Oh, wow. Everybody answers to somebody. Mm. Having been on both sides, you know, before I came to Red Hat, I worked in digital marketing and web content strategy. And I've been on both sides of, you know, being the vendor and then also being the client. And I think it really boils down to the people on both sides understanding that everyone answers to someone. And really, you know, getting down to what and why, like, always start with, like, what and why, you know, why a podcast, why a website, why an event, why a conference, why a white paper, you know, really getting down to that and showing the client that you are here for them. You are here to make them as successful as they can be, as successful as, you know, as possible, right? In their discipline, in their medium, in their industry, you know. If you show them that and you're really sincere about that, they're going to like warm up to you. They're going to like say, all right, I trust this person. Like there are people at Pacific Content where we've been working with them for so long where they'll say something and it'll come across my desk and like, you know, virtual desk, but like it'll come across my inbox and I'll go, yeah, sure. Like, you know, I, at this point they have built the trust. I know that they're not going to do anything that is going to, you know, endanger our brand and, you know, like be, you know, not in alignment with what our strategy is, what our brand story is. I trust them to do this, you know, and that trust comes with really, really building that relationship from the very beginning, from the jump. Understand that everyone answers to someone. Be patient with the people on both sides and just really get down to the why and the what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, with bigger companies, what I've seen is that there's a lot of waiting around. Not waiting around. That's the wrong way to phrase it. But like, there's so many different layers in that a smaller marketing agency, a smaller podcast agency, whatever, might be a little bit antsy, like try it, let's go. And from what we've been through, like you have to roll with that. Like, you know, the hurry up and wait type of thing. And then, you know, we want it now because we're ready now.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
like
that's rough.
I mean, it's just something that you have to get used to.
Yeah.
But you know, that's something that I've seen from working with bigger clients is that
like
it can be
thing.
Frustrating in the beginning as you're just ramping up and you've got to let that breathe a little bit and still cultivate that relationship.
Yeah.
Let the client know that you're there and that, you know, what can we do? Let's keep trying to have weekly meetings or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so that you know the timeline when they're ready, that you're going to be ready too, and that you're all on the same page.
Absolutely. I like that. That is just all of that plus one, 100%. It can be really, it can make your blood pressure go up quite a few points when there's that kind of hurry up and wait mentality and you don't hear anything and there's like a vacuum of space and then all of a sudden it's like, we got the budget, we're ready to go. You know, it can be kind of startling. I mean, like as much as possible, like, you know, front load your prep, like really, like, you know your subject, know your topic, know the different, you know, stakeholders, know what they want, you know, spell everything out, you know, with the utmost clarity. And you can't really go wrong, even if they come to you at like, you know, 4 o'clock on a Friday and go, all right, Monday, we're doing this. And it's just, you know, we got to go. But if you do that preparation, if you really know, you already know what you're doing, you've already kind of spelled out everything, everyone understands their role, everyone understands the expectation and the objective, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. One question for you that I did not give you is, you mentioned that your podcasts are all audio only.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With YouTube and Spotify and all these other places making investments into video podcasting, how do you think about that for the future of Red Hat Podcasts?
That's a good question. My boss would have a very specific answer, but I will try my best. I guess we do have a presence on YouTube. Command Line Heroes did also have a presence on YouTube as well, with a stationary kind of graphic and, you know, just the audio. But obviously things are changing. Mm-hmm. We're moving as a company. We're trying to understand, video first. You know, we have an entire internal video team. You've probably seen our commercials and things. We produce all of those in-house. There's also been quite a bit of animations in the past. Like we did one animation that was amazing. We actually got a vendor to do this one for season 6 of Command Line Heroes, which was the first season I worked on. And it was really exciting because that animation, that short kind of animation, was actually based on an idea that I came up with. So that was also really cool. But we do have we are looking forward to, you know, video first and social media native video. In particular, which is, you know, I think that a lot of different businesses, a lot of different marketing agencies are banking on that as well and trying to learn as much as they can about it. We're thinking of the same things. We're doing the same, you know, the same motions, trying to figure out, like, you know, how to best serve our audience. And that's really, you know, that's really what it boils down to. Like, I don't know what my boss has got cooking from day to day. I'm sure he thinks the same thing about me. but I'm really excited about, you know, the whole, you know, movement, you know, some people are kind of afraid. I feel like at the event that we met at a few weeks ago, it was a gentleman who asked a question about a video, and I couldn't help but notice that, like, it was kind of like a hesitation, because you have a lot of people who have been doing podcasting for a long time and they don't want to do video. Mm-hmm. And I get it, but I get it. Trust me. I don't want to say I don't want to do it either. It's just a lot of logistical work that is added on to the things I already have to do. And I can feel the kind of hesitation. But if this is where the market is going, if this is where we are all moving towards, we have to go where the audience is. And that's really across the board. Whatever you do, you have to go where your audience is. And that's really what this is. And we might as well just embrace it and have fun with it.
That's exactly right. And I remember that conversation too, and hearing the fear in his voice, you know, the concern. I actually just ran into somebody today who said, I really enjoyed your episode with Deshaun Brown on the Earfluence podcast.
Yeah.
And do you do all your episodes on video? Because, you know, that's honestly, that's the only way I would watch it, or I would listen to it, if it's on video. Like, otherwise, I just can't pay attention. Mm. And like that I hadn't heard before. I knew that some people prefer video because they like to watch it, and, like, you know, they can still listen to it and then come back to it actually watching it if they want to. Like, my team is younger than I am, and most of them will watch a podcast rather than listen to a podcast. That's not me, but like, I'm not the target market in a lot of situations.
Yeah.
And so we do have to evolve and figure out, like, what are, obviously 5 million downloads doesn't lie, but, you know, I can't wait to see what Red Hat does with video podcasts also.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, it's exciting because it's kind of like the spirit of, like, it's like a new frontier. You're kind of like exploring and like it's new, but it's not new, right? This video, YouTube's around for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's a new, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a new frontier where, you know, people are looking at all these different kind of mediums, and they're all kind of merging together to make kind of an immersive, like, engagement or an immersive kind of experience. Even like in meat space, like experiential marketing, it's all kind of coming together. And whoever, like, cracks this nut first, that's going to be a really rich person.
Mm.
I think that there's a lot of people in the market that are doing really exciting things. You know, maybe not in the B2B space, but definitely like in the overall kind of like content creation space. And, you know, I'm excited to see what happens, honestly.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Kim, this has been amazing. Anything that I didn't ask that you wanted me to?
Yes. I want to talk a little bit, because I want to send some love to more of our internal folks. So not just the audio aspects of what we do, but also the art. Each season of Command Line Heroes has its own art style. If you go to redhat.com, you can see a lot of that beautiful artwork. All of that is created in-house at Red Hat. We did not hire anyone to do that work. All of that is created by Red Hatters just like me. We have a couple of animations. Like, one we did commission, but the other animations that we have, I think, for Compiler, the Compiler trailer, that was produced at Red Hat by a Red Hatter. We have extensive art direction meetings. And yeah, I have to go in there and tell these people what these episodes are about, because when this art is being produced, when all these things are being drawn up and concepted, those episodes don't exist yet.
Yeah.
So I have to go in there and tell them, like, you know, together with myself with Johan Philippine, we have to go into these meetings and tell them, hey, this is what the episodes are about. Here's what's happening. Here's, you know, we're telling a story, and they're taking what we're saying and translating it into visuals, which I think is fascinating and, like, just amazing work. I want to call out Karen King, Boo Boo House, Alex Trabolsi, Rachel Rattel, Claire Allison, who's no longer with the company, but I'm calling her out anyway. she came up with a lot of the compiler, a creative for Compiler, which I have some to share with you all after this is over. But I want to call them out because a lot of that stuff, you know, you see it and it doesn't really dawn on you that, like, there's so many people that work on this show, that work on this thing, and they don't really get the credit or get the recognition they deserve. I just wanted to call them out really quick because I think it's what they do is incredible.
That is awesome. The talented artists, like, that is not in my wheelhouse whatsoever.
It's not in mine either.
Oh my gosh. My girls will start an art project and they'll ask for help on it. And, like, I just tense up. I'm like, I can't do this. At two, they were way more talented than I am in terms of artwork. Yeah. And the people that can do this stuff is fascinating to me.
It's so, I mean, down to like individual episodes, they make this the most incredible. I mean, you can go to redhat.com right now, redhat.com, you know, go to our podcast page. You'll find Chameleon Heroes there. Just check out the older seasons. And if you don't listen to the episodes, for God's sake, check out the art because it is dope. Like, there's no other word to use to describe it. It is just amazing. The work that they do is just, it takes my breath away just thinking about it. So I wanted to say that. I had to put them in here because I think it's such an amazing thing that they do for us all the time, all year round now. So, yeah.
Love it. Love the shout outs. Well, Kim Wong, thank you so much for coming on the Earfluence podcast here. Tell us what you're excited about for the next seasons of, you know, all your podcasts.
I sure will. Today was the series premiere of our latest series of compiler. It's called Legacies. So what is it about legacy technology that makes people cringe? Like, if you're thinking about, you know, whether it's, you know, old hardware that's like taking up space in your attic, or it's that clunky old system that you're using at your job every day. What is it that makes people cringe, right? You know, technology of that type is all around us. You know, if you ever, you know, book a plane ticket, you're using legacy technology. If you've, you know, if you go to the bank and you withdraw money, you're using technology that was made in the 1960s. Why is it not going anywhere? And what can we learn from it? So now, you know, with you know, all of this AI and all these new technologies coming out, what is it about the old guard that is fascinating, and what can we learn from that? And that's what the latest series of Compiler is about. And it came out today. You can check it out right now on redhat.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, in a few weeks, we're going to have season two of Code Comments. Things are a little bit different. We're coming back with a brand new host, Jamie Parker. She's amazing. And we're going to do a season about automation. I want you to check that out. Go download Compiler. Go give it a listen. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it.
Wow. Those were awesome teasers, by the way.
Thanks.
Wow. I'm into it.
Awesome.
And everybody listening, everybody watching, we'll put all that in the show notes so you can go check that out. Kim, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a huge honor. I'm really excited. Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you so much.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you for listening to the Earfluence podcast. If you're interested in full service podcast production, audio, video podcast production, go visit earfluence.com or follow along where we're at Earfluence Media. I'm Jason Gillikin, CEO of Earfluence, and we'll see you again soon on the Earfluence podcast.